At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. Whether it's a walk-off grand slam or a base hit to center field. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment. It's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER.
I'm so excited to tell you JCPenney and country music singer-songwriter Walker Hayes are partnering together on a new limited-time men's collection for the everyday guy. What I love about Walker Hayes is his laid-back nature. He's a family man and being a country megastar while also having 7 kids. You know he likes to keep his style cool and casual. This new collection is perfect for the guy living the t-shirt life or someone wanting some fresh options that feel just as good. It's easy to wear, affordable styles that celebrate the ultimate family man, along with the quality, durability, and sensibility dads appreciate. Available online Saturday, May 4th at jcp.com and in-store Thursday, May 16th. Just in time for Father's Day. Limited time only. JCPenney, make it count.
Warmer brothers, hello! Welcome to the lovely Las Vegas for Guest Hoops with myself, Greg Hoops Peterson, now part of the VEASAN Family Podcast. We've got an amazing podcast for you as it is the first of our conference previews. We're going to be taking a look at the Atlantic Sun, as I always do on this podcast. We go low slash mid-majors first, and then I'm going to be going with the power conferences in the back half of the offseason to get you guys set for the upcoming college basketball season. I try to go in as close to alphabetical order as possible. Typically due to guest availability when I'm able to do these interviews, we're going to go a little bit with a little bit of a shake-up, like the America East technically is number one in terms of alphabetical order rather than the Atlantic Sun, but I was able to get a great guest on the show today to talk Atlantic Sun, so decided to do this conference first as Blake Lovell. He does amazing work over at Southeastern 14. He also does quite a few of the conferences over at Blue Ribbon Yearbook. He's going to be joining me. We're going to dive into all 11 of these teams, take a look at the nitty-gritty for them, what sort of the lay of the land is on all of them, take a look at the roster moves that we've seen. And then in the final segment, I'm going to give you guys my projector or finish for all 11 of these teams in the Atlantic Sun, as there were 14 teams last season, but we saw Kennesaw State along with Liberty and Jacksonville State decide to leave the conference for mainly football reasons, so we are down to 11 now, and I'm going to be giving you guys my lay of the land on all of those, give you guys my projector or finish, so it is going to be a lot of fun. And here in segment number one, we're going to be taking a look at the betting trends and just some of the styles of play that we see here in the Atlantic Sun. And if you do have a question, comment, segment idea, what have you for this podcast, you do have one of two ways we offer those in. First one is my Twitter timeline at @unit_81. Keep in mind, letters EM, they mean does not matter, so as per usual, please do send these into the timeline. The other way is find an Apple Podcast review. If you rate this podcast 5 stars, it is very much appreciated. From there, you're able to fire in whatever you'd like to hear on this podcast via that 5-star review. Typically, I don't take questions with regards to conference previews, and if you do ever fire one in when I am doing a conference preview, I will answer that the next day, just like with the news and notes of college basketball. Not going to be hitting upon those from Saturday, so I'm going to do Saturdays and Sundays on the podcast tomorrow, so that's the way that we operate now that we've got the formalities done. Let's get down to business, and let's take a look at an Atlantic Sun that it loses the two most dominant teams in this conference. Liberty and Kennesaw State last year went 15-3 within the conference. Both teams won 20-plus games. You did have two teams that are returning that won 20-plus games, and Lipscomb and Eastern Kentucky. And Eastern Kentucky, in their own right, they were able to make the CBI final, but certainly that does leave this conference a little bit gutted. Jacksonville State, they had a rough year last year. They were 13-18 overall, 6-12 in the conference. They leave as well, but what that also does is it leaves out two of the more prolific offensive teams in terms of just points scored on a per-possession basis from this league. And what I think is going to be a hallmark of this league, just finding out who in the heck is able to play defense, because you've got some of the lesser defenses in all of college basketball in this conference, and some of them are teams that play very slow, like Stetson along with Bellarmine. These are two of the slowest teams in all of college basketball, along Jacksonville. We cannot forget about Jacksonville, as all three of these teams, they were in the bottom 35 in terms of total possessions per game, but You do have a lot of defenses that they need to pick it up, and most of these defenses, they allow you to take a bunch of threes. Bellarmine was number one in all of college basketball in terms of percentage of shots from opponents that came from three-point range. Jacksonville allowed you to hoist up a whole bunch of threes as well. Meanwhile, North Florida, they forced you inside, but they just weren't effective with their defenses. They were actually the worst team in terms of points allowed on a per-possession basis in this conference at 354th. Stetson was certainly a team, though, that they let you always sit up from three. They were a team that they clocked in 343rd in the country in terms of points allowed on a per-possession basis. And, I mean, it really was grody for a lot of these teams. Austin Peay was very much less than savory last season as well, though. You're going to find out in segment number two and segment number three that they turned over a new leaf. They were 321st in the country in terms of points allowed on a per-possession basis. Bellarmine was 326th with this regard. North Alabama was 307th. So, I mean, that's over half the conference right there in the bottom 55 in terms of points allowed on a per-possession basis. So, not necessarily too terrific there. Queens NC, I know, was a bottom one on our team as well. You had them more around 288th in the country with that regard. So it's just all about finding out who's going to be able to play some defense. And you do have some very prolific three-point shooting teams. As Stetson, they were 12th overall in the country in terms of three-point shooting percentage. Eastern Kentucky, they didn't generate as many steals as they have in the past, but they were willing to crank it up tempo. Florida Gulf Coast, they were hoisting up a bunch of threes. Central Arkansas is always looking to play with their hair on fire as well. North Alabama took a bunch of threes. So this is really a make-or-take league. And with regards to this make-or-take league, you did see quite a few teams be profitable. Now, two of the more profitable teams in Liberty and Kennesaw State, they're on the fold. Liberty was 18-13-2 against the spread. Kennesaw State was 21-1-10 against the spread. But how about what Eastern Kentucky was able to do last season? Thanks to their big run in the CBI, they went 23-10-1 against the spread. Here were the teams that had a better against the spread record and a better cover rate than them. UConn and Utah Valley. That's it. They were third best at all of college basketball, being able to cover the spread. So that was absolutely terrific for them. You did have a couple slugs in this conference. Jacksonville, just more was expected out of them. Year number one under Jordan Mincy was terrific. Year number two, which was last year, they really took a little bit of a fall off. 10-16 against the spread for them. Florida Gulf Coast were also victims of their early season success. They were very good outside the conference. In conference, they were not so great. 12-19 against the spread. You may recall Florida Gulf Coast actually went on the road. They knocked off USC to begin the season, but had a lot of profitable teams, as among the teams that are returning, all but four of them were able to go at least 51.6% against the spread last season. So that's a big hallmark as to how this conference was able to perform in for the Atlantic Sun. They had really good results outside the conference. If you take a look at their non-conference cover rate, this was one of the better ones that you were able to find in all of college basketball. You had just two teams have a sub-500 record against the spread out of conference. Central Arkansas went 5-7 against the spread. Jacksonville, they went 3-5 against the spread. As Queens NC, the newest team to the D1 level last year, 9-1 against the spread outside the conference thanks to their run in the CBI. You saw Eastern Kentucky go 9-4-1 against the spread outside the conference. Austin Peay, Bellarmine, Lipscomb, they all went 6-4 against the spread outside the conference. So it was relatively impressive to take a look there. And for the Atlantic Sun, it's not necessarily the world's most spread out conference anymore, as you did have NJIT in the fold a few seasons ago, but these are all schools in the Carolinas, in the state of Florida. You do have to go down to like Alabama for a game or two, but it's not like travel is necessarily too bad. And I think that that has been really the beneficiary of some of these road teams, as you did see Kennesaw State do a tremendous job on the road last season against the spread. They went 11-4-1 with that regard. Liberty was honestly really bad against the spread on the road. 3-9-1 as they had a very good home court. But I mean, when it comes to home court, it is quite powerful in this conference. As you saw Stetson, Bellarmine, and Eastern Kentucky, along with North Alabama as well, they went 9-8-1 against the spread. Be your really only profitable teams against the spread when they're away from home. As you take a look at these home teams, and you had just three teams against the spread cover fewer than 50% of their games at home. Bellarmine was 4-6-1 against the spread on their home floor. Florida Gulf Coast and Jacksonville, well, it was not great for these teams in the state of Florida. Jacksonville, 3-7 against the spread at home. 4-8 against the spread was Florida Gulf Coast. Meanwhile, North Florida. They covered all but two of their 13 home games last season at home on the best marks in all of college basketball. Eastern Kentucky, 10-2-1 against the spread at home. Stetson, 7-2-1 against the spread. You saw Kennesaw State go 9-4 as well. So these are some very underrated home court environments. And it doesn't even necessarily have the world's most travel involved. And what we also saw out of the Atlantic Sun was, I was talking about this quite a bit earlier, it's a make-or-take league, and you saw a whole bunch of overs from a whole bunch of teams, with Stetson really being the moniker of this, as Stetson, they had 21 overs, 7 unders, and a push. 75% of their games went over. That was the number one mark in all of college basketball, so they certainly did skew these numbers quite a bit, and the big reason why you saw so many games for Stetson go over, they were a team that was in the bottom 30 in terms of total possessions per game. They just hit everything, and their opponents hit everything, so I mean, it's really hard to be like, well, we're going to get a very low amount of possessions, but yet somehow, some way, we're going to get all these points. That was sort of the vector that you were in with regards to trying to gauge some of these sets and totals. Everyone else was relatively in line. The highest over rate for any team outside of Stetson was 56.7%. The highest under rate for any team in the conference, 54.8%. So it was relatively even, Steven. You didn't have necessarily anything too demonstrative, like Florida Gulf Coast was your best under team. 14 overs, 17 unders. Your next best over team, North Florida. 17 overs, 13 unders, and a push. So bookmakers were able to do a great job of this conference. As a matter of fact, you had three separate teams go 50-50 in terms of their overs and unders. Austin Peay, North Alabama, and Jacksonville. So, I mean, it was a conference that, even though you do have some teams that they look to play super up-tempo, you've got your likes of Central Arkansas, you've also got out there a team like Queens that is looking to play quite a bit up-tempo, and then you got Bellarmine, Stetson, they play super slow. They were able to be identified quite a bit, but what I find to be interesting is what we did see in conference, because when it got to conference play, that's where the overs really started to happen, as you had Liberty be your best under team in the conference at 57.1%. Your next best under team was Austin Peay, and Austin Peay, they're going to be bringing in a new coaching regime, so it's hard to put a much credence into the fact that they had 10 unders and 8 overs in conference play, but you saw all these teams in North Florida, Bellarmine, Queens, and Kennesaw State play at least 57.9% of their conference games over. Stetson, they were the best over team in the conference. Shock, shock, surprise, surprise. 13 overs, 5 unders, and 1 push. And then you did see the likes of Central Arkansas, Florida Gulf Coast play right around 52 to 53% of their games to the over. You had a modest amount of unders with a few other teams, but certainly you did see in conference things get a little bit more harebrained as teams got to know each other. They were able to know where to take those threes, and that caused for a little bit of a higher scoring game in general with regards to a lot of these teams. And these teams really did have a little bit of a tough time guarding on the road, as a lot of these overs, they did come when these teams were on the road, as you saw Stetson play 11 overs, 4 unders, and a push when they were away from home. And then you had Bellarmine, Lipscomb, 10 overs, 8 unders on the road. Central Arkansas, 9 overs, 5 unders, and a push when they were on the road. You had one team hit 60% of their games to the under when they were on the road. That was Florida Gulf Coast. But really past that, you had a very modest amount of unders. You only had one other team play more than one more under than over. North Alabama, 10 unders and 8 overs when they were on the road. So certainly these teams did struggle a little bit with their defense on the road, and that did cause for the home teams to be able to cover quite a few of their games when they were at home. So that's a little bit of a lay of the land in the Atlantic Sun, some of the trends that we saw from this last season, and just the way that these teams play in general, as it is going to be a little bit of a topsy-turvy Atlantic Sun with three teams going to new conferences. But that means that this conference is wide open, especially with Kennesaw State, Go Owls, being the team that represent the team in the NCAA tournament. So we will see a new representative in the NCAA tournament this year in the Atlantic Sun. And coming next, we've got to take a look at these rosters to try to identify which team might be the most likely to do so. And we do so with Blake Lovell of Southeastern 14 on the flip side here on Coast to Coast Hoops with myself, Greg Eubes Peterson, now a part of the Beeson Family Podcast, the Atlantic Sun Preview Edition.
At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. Whether it's a walk-off grand slam or a base hit to center field. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment. It's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER.
With AT&T in-car Wi-Fi, elevate your adventure by transforming your vehicle into a reliable Wi-Fi hotspot. Connect up to 10 devices up to 50 feet away from your vehicle, making it ideal for camping and road trips. Don't miss out on the fun. Embark on your next adventure today. Visit att.com/in-car Wi-Fi to check if you're eligible for a free trial. Always pay careful attention to the road and don't drive distracted. Wi-Fi hotspot intended for passenger use only when vehicle is in operation. Compatible device and vehicle required.
At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. See for yourself when you sign up today and get $150 in bonus bets when you bet just $5. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment, it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only, must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply.
With AT&T in-car Wi-Fi, elevate your adventure by transforming your vehicle into a reliable Wi-Fi hotspot. Connect up to 10 devices up to 50 feet away from your vehicle, making it ideal for camping and road trips. Don't miss out on the fun. Embark on your next adventure today. Visit att.com/in-car Wi-Fi to check if you're eligible for a free trial. Always pay careful attention to the road and don't drive distracted. Wi-Fi hotspot intended for passenger use only when vehicle is in operation. Compatible device and vehicle required.
Are you ready to become a winning sports bettor? Schedule a call with SBIA to find out how their service can make you a long-term winning player. They've developed an innovative algorithm that maximizes units return, and they are so confident in their system that they offer a money-back guarantee. Sign up by October 31st and get their MBA package at no cost until they reach 10 net units. They treat sports betting like a business. So if you want to learn how to make your sports betting dreams a reality, visit them at SBIA1.com and check them out on social media at SBIA Sports.
And we're back here in Las Vegas for Cuscus Hoops with myself, Craig Hoops Peterson, now part of the VSiN family of podcasts. This is the Atlantic Sun Preview Edition, and this is a man that does a great job of taking a look at the game of basketball. It's Blake Lovell. He is the main man over at Southeastern 14, which has dedicated all to SEC basketball and baseball. I know that they are getting cranked up for what is going to be a very, very nice run of things for many of those teams trying to compete for Omaha, but that said, he does a terrific job. Take a look at all forms of basketball. As I know that year in and year out, he does a great job with his previews over at Blue Ribbon Yearbook as well. And to be able to follow Blake Lovell on Twitter, that's at the Blake Lovell. Last name is spelled L-O-V-E-L-L. And Blake, great to have you aboard. Thank you.
Yep, always enjoy it, Greg. Thanks for having me on.
Thank you, Blake, for joining me. And before we dive into all of these teams, just what do you make out of conference realignment? Because with Kennesaw State, the team that won the conference last year, Liberty, and Jacksonville State out of the fold, I feel like this conference is now wide the heck open. And not having Liberty out there in the fold, I don't think that the teams of the conference are too sad about that in terms of their NCAA tournament hopes.
Yeah, we know Liberty's been right there, Greg, for a while now with Richie McKay, kind of what he's done there. But, you know, now, yeah, you look at it, like you said, we mentioned the team before we started recording, and Austin Peay now kind of coming in and maybe having a chance, you know, right off the bat to certainly compete at the top, have a good opportunity with that. And you just look around at all the other teams, which kind of an interesting mix of styles and those kind of things. And certainly you've got some name value in terms of the coaches that are in this league and, you know, even with the teams that are exiting. So, yeah, it makes for a lot more of an interesting discussion, I think, and probably makes it, you know, we say this quite a bit when it comes to these kind of leagues and this sort of extent of the realignment. I think it just makes it more unpredictable because you don't really know exactly what to expect kind of heading into now another version of the Atlantic Sun. And I think it's going to make it a lot more, you know, entertaining just to see how things play out.
Oh, it is certainly going to be entertaining. And for the Atlantic Sun, there were some successes for this team last season in the postseason. And Eastern Kentucky was one of those teams. They made the CBI final, and they're bringing back a lot of their guys from last year as they return all of their three players that had at least six rebounds per game. They bring back pretty much all of their top five scorers, Devontae Blanton, Michael Moreno and company. These guys are all going to be back in the fold. They bring in Central Arkansas guard Colin Cooper from within the conference. I do think that there's some upward momentum here for Eastern Kentucky, even though their steal rate was down a little bit from last season. Felt like Eastern Kentucky was really able to find their form towards the back half of last season.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like it's, you know, we've talked about the Atlantic Sun for several years now and doing these. And I think it's, or just Eastern Kentucky, obviously the OVC a couple years ago. But, you know, we've always talked about just the style that they play, A.W. Hamilton, and kind of knowing that they're going to play up-tempo. And you mentioned it, kind of looking at the steal rate and those kind of things. And how it plays into their overall style. But I still look at it, you know, they're a team that just looking at them really over the past several years, it seems like they're a team that certainly takes care of the ball. They force kind of that everyone to try to play, you know, their type of style and the tempo and those kind of things. And like you said, you look at the group that they've got coming back, you feel like there's enough there to build off of, you know, what they did last season. And look, I mean, we can say this too, can't we, Greg? Like, there is also a benefit, I think, of being a team now that's been in the A-Sun for a couple years. And again, you're talking about the teams that are exiting with Liberty and what they've done, Kennesaw State, Jacksonville State. There is something to the fact now that I think that you're looking at it if you're Eastern Kentucky and saying, all right, this is kind of our opportunity to really take a step forward with this new look conference and being a team that built some momentum last season, getting 23 wins or whatever it was. I think there is something to that. And having the group they have coming back, I would feel like that they should be set up in pretty good position to have a pretty successful season there.
I agree with you. And it's going to be interesting to see if this team is able to build off of the upward momentum that they were able to get last year, because North Alabama, since they reclassified to the D1 level, the 18 wins that they got last season, that was their best in program history. We can say what we will about the stupid scheduling logistics of Ole Miss, but they got a road win against Ole Miss and something like a 20-point underdog. That was good. They do lose their top scorer from last year in Daniel Ortiz, but I like sort of the mold that they had from last year, taking a bunch of threes. They bring in a D2 transfer, Tim Smith Jr., that I like. It feels like North Alabama is starting to find their footing in the A-Sun. I don't think that they're necessarily going to be there competing for like a conference title or anything like that, but I do think that there's some nice pieces on this roster, even with the loss of their main scorer, Daniel Ortiz.
Yeah, I mean, I do too. And like you said, I mean, it's kind of just what like these days in terms of the roster. You know, sometimes you're just going to lose your guy. And obviously Ortiz, someone averaged about 15 a game, and you understand what he brought to the table. But when you look at the guys that they do have coming back, and like you talked about, you know, new addition, I do think it's one where last year to me it felt like, and look, it's simple to say, right, just in terms of the record, but it did feel like, okay, we feel like we've kind of turned the corner now as a program, because we had talked about them. We're like, are they ever going to kind of get there in terms of being able to really make that push forward? And I think when you go back and look at it, Tony Buell took that job, what, 2019, or that was kind of his first season. They were able to find some sort of footing there in terms of just getting some of those wins early on, just in conference play. And then how do we build off of that? And they had several seasons where they're able to kind of, you know, stay afloat and be right there sort of in the middle. But then they dropped off, you know, before last season, and you're thinking, okay, can they really make this move? But then to make the jump they did, I think, again, they are going to be another one of those teams that will certainly benefit from the teams that are exiting and kind of looking at those spots that are available now to sort of make that jump up. And I think that he's kind of really figured out exactly what they need to do to be successful now in the A-Sun. And again, it's a new look league, but I think when you look at just how they've made up the roster going into next season and the style they want to play, they're another one of those teams I think that you have to be pretty confident in terms of just being able to, maybe they're not the favorite to win the league, but you would feel like they have a pretty good chance to compete right there near the top.
And I think that this team is going to be competitive, but I will bank on one thing. I will say that this team does not represent in the NCAA tournament because they are ineligible to, as joining me on the show. We do have Blake Lovell. We are previewing the Atlantic Sun. He does great work over at Southeastern 14. That'd be Queens NC, because Queens NC, this is year number two for them at the D1 level. I think the rule is archaic that they are unable to compete for the NCAA tournament. But you know what? With Queens NC, they were able to pull off a nice upset or two in the conference tournament last season. They were really able to build some upward momentum. And I like the pieces of this team. Even with top rebounder Gavin Raines out of the fold for quite a bit of the back half of the season, they were able to do a nice job there. They did lose Jaden Turner due to transfer during the offseason, but they didn't lose a bunch of big-time pieces. Granted, they aren't bringing in a ton new from a season ago, but that said, I take a look at the job that was done by Queens NC. First year at the D1 level, getting 18 wins, was thoroughly impressed by them, and I don't think they're taking a step back this year.
I don't either, Greg, and something I looked at when I was kind of doing my notes on them is, like you said, they got 18 wins last year and they're in their first season. And now we talked about the opportunities that are available with the teams that are leaving. But what really stood out with me is when you looked at it, they were competitive in pretty much every game they played in. You know, it's one of those things. I think the last game of the regular season, they lost by 20 at Liberty, which there's no shame in that when you think about what Liberty's accomplished. But when you really look at it, they played a lot of single-digit scoring games. Like, there were a lot of games that were decided by 5 points or less, you know, 8 points or less, somewhere in there. They got that win, I think it was over Marshall, wasn't it, at the start of the season last year?
Yep.
You know, played well at Nebraska. So I think when you look at it from that standpoint, yeah, like, you know, I don't think you're looking at it saying, wow, maybe this is the first year. They got a few bounces that went their way, but they were in a lot of close games, and they managed to win some of those close games too. So you wonder, with the guys they have coming back, you know, that experience of just being in every game and saying, all right, well, maybe we didn't do a couple of those things right to win, you know, three or four of those games that were decided by 5 points or less. Well, how do we figure that out this season to change our fortune a little bit and be able to win those kind of games? So I'm pretty optimistic about what they can achieve, because we kind of saw them come in with a, you know, confidence right off the set, getting a really sort of notable win to start their campaign. But now when you just kind of look at what they, you know, they're going to bring back this season and see what they can do offensively, I think I would feel like they're another team that probably should be pretty optimistic heading into the season.
I feel optimistic about them. And then another team I feel optimistic about, Stetson, because Stetson is going to be returning a lot of their main guys from last season. Wiza Ponzo, he was a 6'7", little bit of a versatile player. He decides that he is going to be transferring over to Iona, so that's going to be a little bit of a blow. But with Stetson, they are going to need to improve that defense. They were in the bottom 35 nationally in terms of points allowed on a per-possession basis. But all of a sudden, I feel like Donnie Jones has really flipped the script, because they were a little bit more of a defense-oriented team a few seasons ago. Last year, this team was just chucking up three upon three, and I think that they get one of the most impactful transfers in this entire conference. Trayton Thompson, he didn't play a lot at Minnesota, but he's a seven-footer that was in the Big Ten. He comes in the fold to help out a team that could use a little bit more rebounding. Alexis Stefan Swenson, Jalen Blackman in the backcourt. Really like what I saw out of them, and if Stetson is able to shoot the way that they did from three last season, they were in the top 15 nationally with this regard. They've got a chance to do some damage.
Yeah, they do for sure. Like you said, a team certainly that's identified by what it can do offensively. Their defense wasn't great at times, but guess what, Greg? When you're good enough offensively, your defense doesn't have to be perfect, does it? So they were really good. We talked about Donnie Jones before. I think he's just a really good coach, and obviously that's a tough place. It's a tough job. I mean, let's call it what it is, and I think it's one where finally, you know, they were able to sort of turn the corner last season. They kind of had the season that they wanted to have. And I think someone like that, that has the experience he has just in coaching, you know, being at UCF, being at Marshall, I think it certainly sort of helps now that they feel like they've gotten adjusted to really what they need to do to be successful. And like you said, if you look at all their offensive numbers last season, shot as well as they did, be basically a top 10 three-point shooting team, a team that takes a lot of threes, we always say it, that can be a good thing, can be a bad thing, but when you're hitting them, that is sort of the great equalizer in terms of, you know, if you're not a great defensive team or you're not great in certain areas elsewhere, that can be something that can really get you there. And yeah, I mean, talk about Jalen Blackman. I think he is just, you know, he's someone coming back, what, average 15 points a game, and kind of seeing what he brings to the table there in that backcourt. I feel like Stetson Jones will be right there. My guess is should be competing, I think, for the conference title this season.
I agree with you. As joining me on the show, we do have Blake Lovell, does great work over at Southeastern 14, and how about if we take a look at another team that likes to go bombs away from three-point range in the state of Florida? Florida Gulf Coast, once known as a team that was called Dunk City. Well, they're no longer really Dunk City, as it's going to be year number two of the Pat Chambers era. And they got off to a really nice start, and then they just went down the toilet bowl at the end of the year. They lost 9 out of their last 12 games, but it seems as though Isaiah Thompson is going to be back for another year, along Chase Johnson, who combined for 27.5 points, shot 37.5%. from three-point range, and Dellen Johnson, who comes in from Penn State, recruited by Chambers while he was at Penn State. He comes in the fold along with Keyshawn Kelman, starting forward for Princeton and their Sweet 16 run. How do you view this Florida Gulf Coast team? Because with Florida Gulf Coast, I think that they've got the pieces to be successful. I really think what they fell victim to was a little bit of a lack of chemistry towards back half of last season. I do think that year number two under Chambers should be resulting in a better finish than it did in year number one.
Yeah, I think so too. And I think, you know, as we always say, I think it's kind of an adjustment for everyone. And I think it's just one of those things where, like you said, it was a team that certainly, you know, got going early on, hit sort of a bad stretch in there where, you know, in all honesty, they were just kind of struggling on both sides of the floor, scene where they just could not find the rhythm. Some of those games they were losing down the stretch. But again, another team I thought too, they played a lot of close games, right? We talked about that earlier, and I think there is something to that. They lost some close games, and as you mentioned, the chemistry part of it, you know, let's say now, you know, get guys on the floor together a little bit more. Well, now that chemistry builds, and you've got another full off season to kind of get that where you need it to be. Well, you probably win some of those games. now going into this season. And I mean, they were a team, it felt like, Greg. I mean, they lost, I don't remember what the number I had wrote down. I think they lost maybe 5-6 games, something like that, by like 5 points or less or somewhere in there. And I mean, again, I think there's something to just building that chemistry now and having the guys, like you said, coming in, and Isaiah Thompson still there. I think there's a lot you can kind of lean on now for them in year two of the Pat Chambers era. And I feel like they're another team that you just look at the potential. And I feel like we can kind of, you know, you can tie that into all these teams we talked about. You know, the potential seems to be there. And that's why I think this race for the title now with Liberty out of the mix, and of course, Kennesaw State too, they did last year, I think it just makes it a lot more fascinating because you feel like you've got a lot of teams that are sort of set up roster-wise to take that next step. I think you'd have to put Florida Gulf Coast in that mix, even if they weren't to the level of some of the other teams we talked about last season.
I agree with you, and as Florida Gulf Coast was really declining towards back half of last season, North Florida was ascending, but I think that the ascent of North Florida has hit a screeching halt as they have to replace each of their top five scorers from last year. Dorian James, who averaged 5.8 points and 4.8 rebounds per game, he leads the team in darn near everything. They do bring in a pair of forwards and Jake Vanderhuizen. He was over at Bucknell, started for them 2 years ago. And Nate Lateris, he was at Longwood a season ago. Both of these guys have versatility and are able to pop threes. But take a look at this North Florida team, and it seems as though junior college transfer Amatari Moss is probably going to have to assume a lot of the ball handling position. And considering they were 354th nationally and points allowed on a per possession basis, I think this could be a rough year for a North Florida team in a conference that is wide open. And I think that they're not going to be able to take advantage of that.
Matthew Driscoll has been there forever now, it feels like. I mean, he's been there since I think he took the job in, what, 2009, I believe. So, you know, he's been there a while. And it's interesting because I feel like we have had this conversation every, I don't know, 3 years, 4 years. They were a team, I feel like, when the transfer portal really started, they just got hit, you know, where they just had guys that were not, you know, they were transferring out. They kind of had to rebuild the roster. And like you said, it sort of feels like they're right back to that point now to where they are going to have to really losing all those top scorers. You know, certainly you've got guys coming in that should be able to help replace that, but you keep them in the conversation based on what we talked about with all these other teams. And it's like, well, look, they could, you know, figure some things out and maybe some of these new guys are able to come in and really give them a chance. Cause as we know too, we've always talked about with them, they're going to shoot the three. That is something that, you know, you just kind of expect from this team now and under Driscoll that they're going to take 3-point shots. I think when you look at it from that standpoint, if they can put that together, they'll have a chance to be in some games, but the defense is something we've talked about before too. And kind of some of these seasons where they've really struggled, but even in the seasons, I feel like they've had success. They've not really been an elite sort of defensive team. And so that leaves a little less room for error. And I feel like this that has to replace as much scoring as they do, which, as we've said before, I mean, look, a lot of other teams can say that too, just based on the nature of the transfer portal. But yeah, I feel like they are probably one just looking at them on paper. I don't know that you necessarily see the upside that you see with a lot of these other teams.
Yep, I'm right there with you. I think that it's going to be a rough year for them. As joining me on the show, we do have Blake Lovell. He does great work over at Southeastern 14. And I look at this team as being a little bit of a wild card, and that'd be Lipscomb. Lipscomb was able to pull off a power conference win of their own, being able to take it to Louisville, which, well, it was Louisville, but you know what? Take it how you can get it. But now they have to replace Hassan Asadullah, who, I mean, he was Mr. Do-It-All for the team, but his scoring was way in that down last season, and they do bring back a lot of their top scorers from last year. Jacob Onyesevich, he was able to throw in their 17.5 points per game. Shot just 29.5% for three after he had shot, and I'm not even kidding here, 48.8% for three-point range each of the past two seasons. I think that's going to return to form. Joe Anderson, a career 40% three-point shooter, comes in for Furman as well. This is an interesting team because they're going to be a little bit more thin down low, even with bringing in Oral McCormick over from Presbyterian, because Asadullah just was able to be a deodorant for any stenches that they had for them. But at the same time, they returned darn near everything else. So I think that this is going to be an interesting case study to see how a guy that didn't necessarily score a lot but was a glue guy is going to affect a team that brings back a lot of their scoring but loses that one guy that sort of was that fulcrum.
Yeah, that's always a very good question about whether, you know, you have to replace a guy like that, even when you do have, like you said, a guy coming back who, you know, averaged 18 points a game. You kind of know the guys that hold everything together, and he was certainly someone that was able to do that. But yeah, I mean, I felt like they were, you know, one of those teams that really started to turn the corner. You know, Lenny Acuff, we talked about him when he took the job several years ago. I just thought it was a great hire in terms of what he can bring to the table. Everybody's kind of always talked about just his offensive-minded game that he brings in terms of just how they like to approach things offensively. I think you certainly saw that last year. And you mentioned, I mean, yes, it was Louisville, but to get a win like that, they were competitive, you know, in games against Notre Dame and Michigan on the road too. And so I think when you look at it from that standpoint, to get to 20 wins last year, to be as good as they were offensively, you know, it is a team, like you said, how the roster is made up, may not necessarily have the depth overall in the front court, but I think when you look at how they play and just kind of how efficient they can be and how they run their offense, yeah, I think Lenny Acuff is, again, I know I bring him up a second time here, but I feel like just the way they approach the game, just from a staff standpoint and those kind of things, I think they're another one of those teams you look at and see how they finished last season, you know, to be right there, you know, near the top with a lot of some of the teams that are exiting and really to give themselves a chance. I think they're another team that we throw right in that mix of ones that how do they separate themselves from the other teams we talked about, from Eastern Kentucky, from Stetson, North Alabama, teams like that, Florida Gulf Coast making the ascent. What does that look like just from that standpoint of those teams trying to figure it out and who's going to finish where? But I would expect Clemson to be right there in that mix with those teams.
Yep, I do think that they're going to be an interesting case as they've been right towards the middle of the conference throughout much of the past few years. I think that they might be landing there. And this is a team that has been looking to ascend for many, many years, and they've come up snake eyes recently, but they do return their top scorer, and I'm talking about Central Arkansas. They bring back Cameron Under, 16.5 points, 5 boards, 3.9 assists, 1.5 steals per contest. He was terrific. Now, the support around him has been shaky, and this team was 350th in the country in terms of points allowed on a per-possession basis. How do you view this bunch? Because there's not a lot around Cameron Hunter. They do bring in Daniel Sofield, who at the D2 level was able to put in their 16.5 points per game, which honestly, I think bringing him in from West Florida was a really good get for them. But at the same time, I like Cameron Hunter. The question is, what is he going to be able to have around him to be able to help him out?
Yeah, we've talked about teams like this before where you're like, you just have the guy that you know is going to be out on the floor 35 minutes a game or whatever. That's Hunter. Like, you know he's going to be out there and put a lot of minutes in, and you know he's probably going to lead them in, you know, 4 of the top 5 statistical categories and all these other. That's what you expect. But like you said, when you kind of look at, and we've talked about it with these other teams we've mentioned, there's some good depth in some of these other teams. You feel like they've got a pretty steady rotation of guys that you can count on and feel pretty consistent. But this, I think it's more of a guessing game with what exactly you're going to see around him. You mentioned kind of the defensive issues last year. Certainly that was something that stood out in a lot of those games when you just looked at how they played out. Can they fix that one offseason? If we do have questions just about maybe the overall depth on the roster, I don't know. You know, you're probably not going to put in that group that we just talked about, because even with a player like that, you're still probably going to do the wait and see approach on what happens kind of around him. And if they can really sort of find, you know, that one thing that really separates them, right? And we talked about that with some of these other teams. Yeah, they're going to shoot the three. They don't shoot at a great rate. So what is the one thing other than just playing kind of that high, you know, tempo style, shooting the three? They're just going to have to make more of those shots if they're going to keep playing that style, because certainly on the defensive end, it just hasn't worked out. And I feel like this is a team that they maybe take a step forward from a 9-22 season, winning 4 games in the conference. But are they going to be one of those teams that really challenges near the top? It's just hard to see unless they can find sort of that one that sort of separates them from all these other teams we talked about.
And you were talking about the fact that Central Arkansas does need to knock down those three-point shots. This team is going to need to guard the three-point arc, and I'm talking about Bellarmine, because out of all the field goals that their opponents took, 52% of the shots that Bellarmine forced on defense were three-pointers. That was by far the most in all of college basketball, and I think that this is an interesting bunch, because Bellarmine is one of those classic whole is greater than some of its parts teams. They really didn't have anyone that averaged more than about 12 or 13 points per game, but you knew that you were going to have 5-6 guys that were going to give you about 8 points per game. Now, I do feel like that lack of a go-to scorer, it has been hurting this Bellarmine bunch. You could tell that without Dylan Penn in the fold. They weren't necessarily the same team. They do lose a few pieces from last year. How do you view this Bellarmine team? Because I think that this team has a high floor but a low ceiling as well as a result of the style that they play.
I think it's sort of similar, as we said, just kind of the style. And you look at it, and it is one, like I think you said it perfectly, just sort of the ceiling and the floor. Like, I think that's kind of what you look at with this team, really trying to see, can they make that ascent given what's around them? And I mean, we know kind of what the tempo is going to be. We know, as you said, defensively, there were certainly some gaps there that they're going to have to fill in terms of what they can do there. Just we're not great on that side of the floor. And again, if you're not a team that's really making a lot of shots efficiently, which they shot it well from the free throw line, shot it well from two, but playing sort of that slower tempo type style, really just needing to be able to defend better. I think that's kind of what it comes down to with this team. And it's hard to know because they were a team. Look, they got to 9-9 in conference last year. To me, Greg, they felt like a team that was a little bit more hit and miss. Some of these others we talked about, you know, we mentioned some of those other teams that really played close games. Not to say they didn't play close games, but they just did not fare well. And certainly they played a tougher schedule, right? I mean, not a lot of teams we talked about in the A-Sun that played, what, Kentucky, Duke, UCLA last season. Played Clemson too, I think. Did get a win over Louisville, though, which, as we know, was a popular thing for the A-Sun teams. But look, they could be a team, again, that certainly maybe improves a bit just from being 15 and 18, but they won 9 conference games. But I just feel like they're probably in that next tier of teams beyond kind of that upper tier group that we talked about.
By the way, the Atlantic Sun 2-0 on the road against Louisville last year. So yeah. A better year for the Atlantic Sun and a poo-poo platter of a year for Louisville has joined me on the show. We do have Blake Lovell, who does great work over at Celtics 14 and Blue Rib Yearbook. Blake, we've got two teams left to talk about. And I know that we mentioned this one up top, Austin Peay. They were in dead last in the Atlantic Sun last year, but as we know, what is remaining from the Atlantic Sun team that finished dead last from a season ago? Not too much, because Nate James is out of the fold, and in comes Corey Gibson. And what does Corey Gibson do? He takes all those top scorers they had with them at Northwestern State, a team that really had a nice year in the Southland Conference, and they come with them, including DeMarcus Sharp, who averaged 19.5 points, 5 boards, 5 assists, and he led all of college basketball shooting 54.7% from three-point range. Isaac Haney, 11 points, 2.5 assists per game. Javonta Black, 15.5 points, shot 37.5% from three. Jalen Hampton, top rebounder, he comes in. And then on top of that, Desi Jones, All-Metro Atlantic player from Quinnipiac, he comes into the fold. Anton Brookshire from Iona, shot it well from three. He comes in as well. How do you view this Austin Peay bunch? Because they bring in a lot of talent, and these guys did play with each other last year in the Southland Conference. I do think that it is going to be an interesting sort of shift for them, because it's certainly a different style of play than you find in the Atlantic Sun. Certainly not as rambunctious, fewer steals per game. But I do think that with this Austin Peay team, it's going to be a very interesting case study to see how a team going from playing against really one distinct style to another is going to be able to fare.
Look, I think Austin Peay fans would probably tell you, Greg, as long as they're just better offensively. They would love to see a team that's better offensively, and I find it hard to believe they won't be, because you mentioned the kind of the additions they've made, and I think that will be what's most interesting. You know, we always talk about these situations, someone like Corey Gibson coming in, play there, right? Someone who was there when Austin Peay was having some success. And I do think when you look at programs like this, that can be really important, to have a guy that can come in and really sort of embrace perhaps what they can be as a program now, which, as we know, has kind of gone into a transition now into a new conference. But I do think there is something to putting that type of style, as I said, just a better offensive product out there. They may not be the greatest defensive team this season. They weren't the greatest defensive team last season. But I think if they can just find ways to improve offensively, that will give them a much better chance to be successful, you know, in this league, given what it's going to be now in 23-24. Because if you look back at last season, right, it was just, man, they just could not find a way to score the ball. They weren't terrible defensively all the time, but it's like they just could not put together enough offense. And so I think with the additions they've made, give them a chance to do that in year one as a staff. Will they turn it completely around? Will they be a team that wins the league this season? I don't know, but I think they are a team with, I don't want to call them the wild card, but I do think they are the team that if they put it all together based on what they have on the roster, I would not be surprised at all if they are right there, you know, as I said earlier, maybe near the top with a chance, because I do think that Corey Gibson's put together a roster that should be able to compete on a 9-and-9-out basis. And I think that is going to start with just being a better offensive team. And I think that will go a long way.
Yeah, I think that Austin Peay is going to be one of the more interesting teams just in all of mid-major basketball this year. I like what Corey Gibson was able to do last year at Northwestern State, and we'll see if they're able to continue that upward trajectory with him. And we've got one last team to talk about, and that's Jacksonville. And Jacksonville really had a fall off with their defense. In year number one, under the regime of their coach and Jordan Mincy, I mean, they were a top 75 team in terms of points allowed on a per-possession basis. Last year, that fell to 242nd. There were clearly pieces like Omar Payne and company that didn't work out, and they do lose quite a bit of the backcourt from last season, but they bring in a pair of SIU Edwardsville starting big men in DeJuan Pruitt along Jonathan Curtis into the fold. Robert McCray, former top 200 recruit, comes in from Wake Forest as well. What are your overall thoughts on this Jacksonville team? Because I think that if they get back to playing defense, this team could be right there towards the top of the conference. They also bring back Jayasi Powell. I really like what I saw from him last year, but I feel like this is one of the more interesting teams of the conference because we saw them play so well 2 years ago, and last year there was a big fall off.
Yeah, there was, and I think you just look at the numbers, right? And I think we talked about that. Kind of when Jordan Mitzi took over, it was going to be interesting to see kind of what their style looked like. And, you know, certainly if you're a KenPom fan, you can look at all the tempo numbers and the adjusted, you know, possession length and all that, and you can see all the purple, right, on KenPom. We're all familiar with that. That's what it comes to. You mentioned the defensive part, right? And knowing that you're going to play that much more methodical, and that may be putting it, you know, sort of, you know, easily there. I think you have to be able to defend, you know, at a better rate to be able to play that style. And you have to just be more efficient on the offensive end if you're going to play those kind of games, because they were a team that found themselves in some close games there towards the end of the season. But they were right there, right? Just with the style they played. They played in a lot of lower scoring type games, but they just could not take advantage of some of those opportunities on the offensive end to get enough points. You know, when you look down, Greg, at kind of their list from last season, you're like, you're seeing all these games where they're scoring maybe mid-50s to low-60s. The opponents may be only scoring in the low-60s, you know, somewhere in there too, but they just could not sort of get over that hump in terms of being able to win some of those games. I think they lost maybe 7 of their last 8 last season after, you know, basically 500 in the league. So it will be interesting to see. They are a team that has a clear, identifiable style, right? And we mentioned that earlier, but it just didn't necessarily work the way they wanted it to last season. Can they change that this year? I don't know, and I think it's going to be kind of interesting to see. As you said, sometimes guys just don't work out in terms of the roster, and maybe this year trying to kind of rebuild some things, maybe they got some guys that can more kind of fit the style they want to play, because it is one, as we said, this is kind of a conference of a lot of different mix of styles, and kind of on the extreme it feels like to one end or the other in terms of tempo. They're certainly one that plays it's certainly a much slower tempo, and we'll see kind of how that can sort of counter what some of these teams are doing elsewhere.
And Julian Mackey, who was the number 39 recruit according to JUCORecruiting.com, 20.5 points, 5 boards, 2.2 steals on 43.3% 3-point shooting. I think that is what the doctor ordered for Jacksonville. Yep. And what the doctor ordered for this podcast was some Blake Lovell. And it was a very good dosage, because Blake, you do a great job over at Southeastern 14. I know year in and year out, you do a great job with your conference previews as well over there at Blue Ribbon Yearbook. So love to get people at home, know it's all on tap for you, and how people are able to follow along on social media and other platforms.
Yep, always appreciate it, Greg. Like you said, you can check out all the stuff, you know, the SEC-related stuff, certainly at Southeastern 14, and all the Blue Ribbon stuff, as you said. Guys doing such a great job. As we said before we started recording, Greg, we're doing conference previews now, and that's when you sort of know that, yeah, it's still a little far away, I guess, in terms of when the season actually starts, but we're not that far away now. And I think it's one of those things that really just gets exciting to talk about some of these conferences. So yeah, everything else, you can find me on Twitter at @TheBlakeLevel.
And Blake does an absolutely tremendous job taking a look at the game of college basketball every single time he joins his podcast. Always delivers tremendous insights, and he did much more of that today. So big thanks to Blake for joining me right here on Cusco Soups, now part of the VEASAN family podcast. And coming up next, it is that time of the podcast to give you my projector of finish for the Atlantic Sun.
At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. See for yourself when you sign up today and get $150 in bonus bets when you bet just $5. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment, it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only, must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply.
With AT&T in-car Wi-Fi, elevate your adventure by transforming your vehicle into a reliable Wi-Fi hotspot. Connect up to 10 devices up to 50 feet away from your vehicle, making it ideal for camping and road trips. Don't miss out on the fun. Embark on your next adventure today. Visit att.com/in-car Wi-Fi to check if you're eligible for a free trial. Always pay careful attention to the road and don't drive distracted. Wi-Fi hotspot intended for passenger use only when vehicle is in operation. Compatible device and vehicle required.
At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. Whether it's a walk-off grand slam or a base hit to center field. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment, it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only, must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER.
With AT&T in-car Wi-Fi, elevate your adventure by transforming your vehicle into a reliable Wi-Fi hotspot. Connect up to 10 devices up to 50 feet away from your vehicle, making it ideal for camping and road trips. Don't miss out on the fun. Embark on your next adventure today. Visit att.com/in-car Wi-Fi to check if you're eligible for a free trial. Always pay careful attention to the road and don't drive distracted. Wi-Fi hotspot intended for passenger use only when vehicle is in operation. Compatible device and vehicle required.
At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. See for yourself when you sign up today and get $150 in bonus bets when you bet just $5. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment, it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply.
With AT&T in-car Wi-Fi, elevate your adventure by transforming your vehicle into a reliable Wi-Fi hotspot. Connect up to 10 devices up to 50 feet away from your vehicle, making it ideal for camping and road trips. Don't miss out on the fun. Embark on your next adventure today. Visit att.com/in-car Wi-Fi to check if you're eligible for a free trial. Always pay careful attention to the road and don't drive distracted. Wi-Fi hotspot intended for passenger use only when vehicle is in operation. Compatible device and vehicle required.
And we're back here in Las Vegas for Coast to Coast Heaps with myself, Greg Hoops Peterson, now part of the VEASAN Family Podcast. It's always great to get Blake Lovell aboard. He joins me a lot for many of these conference previews. Every single time he joins me, he does an amazing job lending his insights. It's going to be a very fun year out there in the Atlantic Sun, and he's a big help in being able to take a look at this conference. So a big thanks to Blake of Southeastern 14 for joining me in the last segment. Now it is that time of the podcast. I give you my projector or finish for the Atlantic Sun. I've got coming in 11th place because, well, we went from 14 teams in this conference down to 11. North Florida, they have to replace each other top five scorers from last season. Dorian James is the top returning scorer from last year with 5.8 points, 4.8 rebounds per contest. They're most likely going to be looking to the junior college route for a little bit of backcourt support. Amatari Morris, who is able to average 10 points per contest at State College of Florida, seems to be in line for a lot of minutes. Just not ideal. They bring in Nate Lateris along Jake Vanderhuizen. Vanderhuizen was a starter 2 years ago at Bucknell. Was able to pop a few threes. Average 6.5 points, 3.5 boards. He's got a little bit of size. Lateris, he's able to pop a few threes as well. But really nothing overwhelming for this team. Oscar Berry is really going to need to get back to how he was able to perform at Fairleigh Dickinson when he was closer to a double-figure scorer last year, about 5 points per contest. Solid three-point shooter. I don't know who's bringing up the ball for this team. I think that there's going to be a lot of issues for North Florida, a team that was one of the worst in all of college basketball on defense to begin with a season ago. So we have got North Florida dead last in terms of my projector or finish. At number 10, I am going to be going with Central Arkansas. Now, with Central Arkansas, they've got a pretty awesome guy that I like in Cameron Hunter. Was able to give the team nearly 17 points, 5 boards, 4 assists, 0.5 per game last season. Where is the support going to be coming from? Daniel Sofield, he comes in from West Florida, non-D1 University, averaged 16.5 points, shot 38.5% from 3. That's great, but you're going to be looking at Obagasi Glory Etum, who was at Bowling Green last year, where he had about 2 rebounds per contest. Now, about a team that was 299th in the country in terms of rebound rate last season, that's not necessarily great. You've had a lot of guys that just have been in and out of the fold. They're going to be having to look past the fact that they're going to be without Eddie Cuyelaut, as well as he's just out of eligibility. Masai Oluwakye, Elias Cato, they combined to be able to give you 9 or so rebounds per contest. So that's going to be a little bit of help. But I mean, the Central Arkansas team, year in and year out, just really bad on defense. They're not necessarily the most prolific or the most efficient three-point shooting team as well. I think there's going to be some issues here. So I did set Central Arkansas number 10 in terms of my projector or finish. At number 9, I'm going to be going with Bellarmine. Bellarmine is going to allow you to shoot threes. 52% of opponent shots came from three-point range. They were the only team in all of college basketball that allowed their opponents to take more than 50.3% of their shots from three-point range. With Bellarmine, they are going to be playing their slow style. They've always been in the bottom 75 in terms of possessions per game since they've come up to the D1 level, and they're going to be looking to Billy Smith, who averaged right around 6 points per contest as a 6'7" combo player at Ball State, and Desmond McKinney, who shot 38.5% from three a few years ago at North Dakota State but didn't play any college basketball last year, to really hold down a fort that is going to be involving a lot of moving parts. Justin Betts, who was a guy that just had a lot of versatility. He was a guy that threw the ball over his head when Bellarmine was able to win that game against Louisville. He is just completely out of eligibility. You've got just a hodgepodge of guys. Bash Weiland, you're hoping that he has a clean bill of health. He played just 8 games last year, 9.5 points per contest. I liked what I saw from him. But, I mean, you've got just a mix of guys that they're just a little bit hot and cold. Ben Johnson, 11 points per contest. That should be able to help them out. But they're not really adding a lot from a team that they were 326th in points allowed on a per-possession basis each out of the last two seasons. So I do think that for Bellarmine, defense is going to be an issue, losing quite a bit of that veteran leadership from a season ago. That's going to hurt them as well. I've got them number 9 in terms of my projector of finish. And number 8, I'm going to be going North Alabama. North Alabama does lose their top scorer in Daniel Ortiz, or else I do think that this team would be pretty awesome in the conference. You bring back Damian Forrest, so 7.5 points, 6.5 boards. He's able to give you a little bit of block per contest. Tim Smith Jr. comes in from Walsh College. He was terrific as a 6'7 wing, able to shoot in the high 30s from 3-point range, 16 points, nearly 8 boards per contest. Will Soucy, he did a very good job towards the back half of the season. Soucy shot 50% from 3 in all the team's 20 games after Christmas with 8.5 points, 4.5 rebounds per game. This is a little bit of a thin team, though, as well as, I mean, Daniel Ortiz, he was able to mask the stench of some of the other guys on this lineup. So I do think that that is going to be a tad bit of an issue for North Alabama. I think that depth is going to be a big thing for them. They were able to do a good job of being able to pop some threes. They were also one of the worst teams in all of college basketball at being able to guard the three-point arc as well. I do think that defense is going to be the bane of North Alabama in this season. Dallas Hallwell, I'm very bullish on him. 6.5 points, 4 boards per contest as well. But you're going to need some of these freshmen that didn't see a lot of minutes to be able to step up. I do have my question marks there. That's why I've got North Alabama number 8 in terms of my projector of finish. And number 7, I'm going to be going with Lipscomb. Now, Lipscomb, they lose Hassan Asadula, who was Mr. Do-It-All for the team at 6'8". He led the team in rebounds and assists per game last season, but Jacob Onyesevich, he is back in the fold. Kid from Sheboygan, Wisconsin, who last year averaged 17.5 points, 4.5 boards, and I expect him to be able to kick it back up with regards to his three-point shooting. Last year, shot 29.5% from 3. The past two seasons, he shot a combined 48.8% from three-point range. I don't think he gets quite back to that, but I certainly do think that that's going to be going northward to be able to replace the man in Mr. Asadula. They are bringing in a Presbyterian big man in Owen McCormick. Stands right around 6'9". Was able to give the team 4 boards, 7.5 points per contest. He's able to pop some threes. They also bring in Joe Anderson. In limited minutes with the Furman program, he was a career about 40% three-point shooter. I like Will Pruitt. I like Darren Boyd. These two guys combined for about 20 points per contest. Both of these guys combined to shoot about 40% from 3. And A.J. McGinnis, he was able to do a solid job of being able to help log some points, as this was a group that was 13th in the country in road field goal shooting percentage. Defense is going to need to be a little bit better for this team. And losing Asadula, you got to figure that that might be taking a little bit of a downward dip. But at the same time, they do have a relatively solid backcourt, a little bit of a TBD frontcourt. That's why I've got them right in the middle, number 7 in terms of my projector of finish. And number 6, I'm going to be going with Queens NC. With Queens NC, I really like what I saw from this team last year. They're not losing a whole heck of a lot from a season ago. They are going to be losing Jaden Turner down for what, which that's a little bit of an issue. 8.5 points, 7.5 rebounds per game. He really stepped up when Gavin Raines was out of the fold, but they should have Gavin Raines back. He was able to give the team 10 rebounds per contest. Absolutely massive. Now, are they bringing in a whole heck of a lot? No, they are not, and Queens NC is going to need to really work on that defense as in terms of points allowed on a per-possession basis. They were one of the lesser teams in all of college basketball, but this team was not shy to take it from three-point range, shooting about 35% as a collective. A.J. McKee was someone that was standing out to me, 15.5 points per contest. Kenny Dye was able to do a very solid job as well, right around 4.8 assists per game. He was a big reason why Queens NC was able to make that leap up to the D1 level. And then don't lose sight of B.J. McLaurin. He's a little bit of a 6'7", do-it-all choker player, 9.5 points, 5.5 boards. With McLaurin, he shot about 39% from 3-point range. As a matter of fact, each of their top three scorers last year shot at least 37.2% from 3-point range. I do think, though, with Queens NC having their main rebounder back in Mr. Gavin Rain, someone who's got very active hands, I think that Queens NC is going to be able to maintain. As Blake said, they were in darn near every single game last year. So I've got Queens NC number 6 in terms of my projector or finish. And number 5, I am going to be going with Jacksonville. Jacksonville has massive questions when it comes to their offense. We all know what style they're going to be playing, though. Slow and controlled. Bottom 5 in the country in terms of total possessions per game last year. And that's really what they've been under Jordan Mincy. In their two seasons, they bring in Robert McRae, who was rated by 247 Sports as the number 151 recruit in the class of 2021. Really didn't play a lot over at Wake Forest, but I do think that he's got a lot of upside to help out this backcourt. And in that backcourt, they're bringing in the number 39 JUCO recruit for the class of 2023, Julian Mackey, who completely lit it up. Shot 43% from 3, 20.5 points, 5 boards, 2.2 steals per game. I'm also very bullish on the incarnate Ward transfer in Stephon Payne, who is able to get right around 9 points, 6 boards, 2 blocks, and 1.4 steals per game in his last 16 starts of the season. Overall for the season, didn't necessarily light the world on fire, but back half of the season, he showed a lot. This is going to be a team in transition. Kavion Nolan, Dylan O'Hearn, these were guys that were relatively solid in the backcourt, but I do think that they got a little bit better. They lose Mike Marsh. He decides to transfer out of the program after he had 10.5 points, 5 rebounds per contest, and they no longer have the services of Omar Payne, but bringing in DeShawn Pruitt, Jonathan Curtis, two guys that played with one another in the backcourt at SIU Edwardsville, I think is big. Edwardsville, they were a relatively solid mid-major defense with Pruitt, 11 points, 8.5 boards, team's top rebounder last season. Curtis was more of the shot blocker with a little bit over a block per contest. I think that these guys are going to be able to coexist with one another. I do still think that you've got question marks in the backcourt with Jacksonville, but I do think after going from right around 70th in the country in terms of points allowed on a per possession basis to 242nd, they're going to be looking a little bit better this season. So I do have Jacksonville number 5 in terms of my projector or finish. And number 4, I'm going to be going with Florida Gulf Coast. With Florida Gulf Coast, they are going to be bringing back much of that backcourt from last season that was prolific towards the beginning part of the season. Back half of the season went down the toilet bowl, but Isaiah Thompson, along with Chase Johnson, they were able to do a nice job combining for about 27.5 points per contest. When it comes to Thompson, shot about 37.5% from 3-point range, goes for the same for Johnson as well, with Johnson being more of the guy that was the better defender with 1.4 steals per contest. They do lose a couple pieces from last season. Caleb Cato, I'm pretty sure, is going to be back out of the fold, but Demir Bishop, he's able to give you a little bit of facilitation. He's able to pop a few threes. That is going to be big for the team. And they bring in a Penn State transfer in Delian Johnson, who was able to average 3.7 points per contest while making 14 starts during the 2021-22 season, 37% three-point shooter, capable of being able to dole out the ball. Keyshawn Kelman, who was a part of that Princeton team that made the Sweet 16. He was a starter for them, 8 points, 4.5 boards for that team. He should be able to help out with Zach Anderson and Andre Weir, who were able to average a combined 21 points, 12.5 boards, 1.6 blocks per contest. I think the Florida Gulf Coast is going to be a little bit better on defense this season, a team that's very much not shy of taking their three-point shots as well. I do think that having a little bit more balance, that's going to be able to help out Dunk City and just a year of chemistry in general, with this now being year number 2 of the Patrick Chambers regime. I do think the Florida Gulf Coast takes some strides forward. I've got them number 4 in my projector or finish. And number 3, I'm going to be going with Austin Peay, a completely new look team, as Austin Peay was dead last in the conference last year. And if you're looking for candidates, they're going to go from worst to first in their conference. Austin Peay needs to be towards the top of that list, because last year they were under the tutelage of Nate James. The offense, as it was alluded to by Blake Lovell, it was a mess. Now Corey Gibson brings with him pretty much everyone that he had at Northwestern State, including DeMarcus Sharp. He was the top three-point shooter among qualifying players in all of college basketball. 19.5 points, 5 boards, 5 assists, 1.9 steals, shot 54.7% from three-point range. Isaac Haney, Jamonte Black, they combined for about 26.5 points per contest. Got a little bit of a steal per game at 37.5% three-point shooting out of Black. With Haney, he was able to give out 2.5 assists per contest. Jalen Hampton, top rebounder from that Northwestern State team. They were able to get right around 7.5 rebounds per game out of him. This was a Northwestern State program that they were one of the top teams in all of college basketball in terms of offensive rebound rate as well, grabbing a miss on 37.6% of their misses. That was 6th in all of college basketball. They bring in Anton Brookshire, who was at Iona last year. Saw limited minutes, 4.2 points per contest, but shot 38.5% from 3-point range, Desi Jones, an All-Metro Atlantic performer from Quinnipiac. 12.5 points, 3.7 boards, 3.8 assists, 1.1 steal, shot over 40% from three. Going to be interesting. Now, they're going to need to play some defense. I do have my question marks there. Chemistry is a little bit of an issue as well, but Corey Gibson proved that he could coach at Northwestern State last season. I think that he's going to be able to have this team fighting towards the top. I've got Ossipee number three in terms of my projector of finish. And number two, I'm going to be going with the Hatters of Stetson. Now, with Stetson, this defense is an adventure. Bottom 50 in the country in terms of points allowed on a per-possession basis. They're going to give up wide-open shots as they were in the bottom 100 in terms of opponents' three-point shooting percentage, but also with this Stetson team, they were able to do a nice job of going bombs away themselves. They shot 38.3% from three-point range, a top 15 mark in all of college basketball. Jalen Blackman, Stephon Swenson. These guys were amazing in the backcourt. Blackman, your top scorer, shot 91% of the charity stripe, 15.5 points per contest. Swenson, he was able to give you 11 points per game, shot about 40% from three-point range. And this is a Stetson team that they really don't lose a lot from last year. Wiesa Ponzo, he is now out of the fold. He was able to give the team some good versatility. At 6'7", he was a starter that did shoot 47% from three. So is that a loss? Yes, but at the same time, with being able to maintain darn near everything else on this roster, that's big. And they don't add in there a lot of guys, but at the same time, the one thing that Stetson was really missing was that one rock-solid rebounder. And you know what? They go to Minnesota, and they're able to pluck away a nice 7-footer to be able to help out there. And Trayton Thompson really didn't see a lot of minutes for them, but in the Atlantic Sun, I do think that he's going to be able to do some nice things. I just think that in general, Donnie Jones is a good coach as well. So I do think that we're going to be seeing some upward momentum for this Stetson team. I've got them number two in my projector of finish, and at number one in my projector of finish, Eastern Kentucky. Eastern Kentucky with, playing like four games in 4 days that like all went to overtime. Somehow, some way, they still made the CBI final. These guys were big giant fighters, and they bring back each other top five scorers from last year. All three guys that were able to lead the team in rebounds, Michael Moreno, Devontae Blanton. These guys are amazing. Blanton, 17.6 boards, shot 37.5% from three as a 6'6" wing. Michael Moreno at 6'7", made 38.5% of his threes, 11.6 half rebounds per contest. Isaiah Cozart, 7.5 boards, 2.5 blocks, 9.9 points per game. You've got Leland Walker, Tayshaun Comer helping out in the backcourt with a combined 6.5 assists and 2 steals per game. They have taken a little bit less of an emphasis away from trying to be able to get steals, but at the same time, they add to that backcourt as well with bringing in Colin Cooper from within the conference at Central Arkansas last year, 10.2 points at a steal per contest. Pierce Thomas, he was over at Butler last year, wasn't necessarily able to see great numbers with them, but at the same time, I do think that he's going to be able to have success at this level. Now, the team needs to improve the fact that they were 340th in the country in terms of free throw shooting percentage, but it is very rock solid. Down low, they were 33rd among all D1 teams in terms of offensive rebound rate, grabbing a rebound on about 31.9% of their misses, with them being able to have good, versatile players that shoot threes and having a lot of chemistry in general. I've got Eastern Kentucky number one in terms of my projector of finish for the Atlantic Sun. And that will wrap things up for the Coast to Coast Hoops preview edition of the Atlantic Sun. And I'm going to be doing one of these for all 32 conferences. If you do like hearing from this fine podcast, Coast to Coast Hoops, you are able to subscribe wherever your podcasts, Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Spotify, Stitcher, and TuneIn. If you have a question, comment, segment idea, what have you for this podcast, you do have one or two ways we offer those in. First one is my Twitter timeline at GNet_81. Keep in mind, letter ZM, naming does not matter. So as per usual, please just send these into the timeline. The other way is find an Apple Podcast review. If you rate this podcast 5 stars, it is very much appreciated. And then from there, you're able to fire or whatever you'd like to hear on this podcast via that 5-star review. Big thanks to Blake Lovell of Southeastern 14 for joining me in the last segment. I am coming at you guys every single day on this podcast. Rain, shine, regular season, off season. That means I'm coming at you once again tomorrow. Thank you so much for tuning in.
At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. Whether it's a walk-off grand slam or a base hit to center field. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment. It's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER.
I'm so excited to tell you JCPenney and country music singer-songwriter Walker Hayes are partnering together on a new limited-time men's collection for the everyday guy. What I love about Walker Hayes is his laid-back nature. He's a family man, and being a country megastar while also having 7 kids, you know he likes to keep his style cool and casual. This new collection is perfect for the guy living the t-shirt life or someone wanting some fresh options that feel just as good. It's easy to wear, affordable styles that celebrate the ultimate family man, along with the quality, durability, and sensibility dads appreciate. Available online Saturday, May 4th at jcp.com and in-store Thursday, May 16th. Just in time for Father's Day. Limited time only. JCPenney, make it count.